Well, good stuff. Hello, folks, and hello, and I hope we're all doing well here, and we're all engaging in our lockdown, and we're gonna do our best, folks. And we're gonna get through this. We're gonna get through this. This is our English spirit, the spirit of Churchill, the spirit that won us the war, the spirit that got us through the Blitz. We're gonna get through this, folks, and we're gonna lock down, and we're gonna get in there, and we're gonna socially distance, and we're gonna avoid all that contact, and we're gonna sort this coronavirus thing out, folks. And I know at the moment I'm in hospital, and I'm a bit under the weather. But I'm gonna pull through. I'm gonna pull through, folks. Oh yeah, I'm gonna pull through, and I think we're all gonna pull through as well. And today, that's why I want to talk to you about something that relates to me, and I want to talk to you about something. Well, because I'm divorced. I'm gonna get married soon. Gonna get married soon, folks. Gonna get married to Carrie soon. Yeah, it's gonna be. Oh, I'm a lucky man. Very lucky man, folks. But I'm prepared a bit. It's been an elephant trap in my life, really. I have been divorced. I've been divorced a couple of times. And I'm not pleased about it, but sometimes that's the ball life throws you, chap. That's the ball life throws you, folks, and that's what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about the kind of chaps and chapesses that become divorced. What is the old psychology of divorce, folks? So hello. Now, I want to make it absolutely clear that I'm only gently making fun of Boris, and unlike certain members of the Labour Party, I don't wish my political opponents ill and want them to become seriously unwell. And I hope Boris gets well soon, for goodness sake, and gets back to what he should be doing and what he loves doing. But anyway, what I want to talk about today relates to Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson has been divorced twice. And that is, what are the kind of people who become divorced? What predicts becoming divorced in terms of psychology? What is the psychology of divorce? And I want to talk about this because I came across a very interesting paper recently on this subject called "Does the Relationship Between Personality and Divorce Change Over Time?" And I thought this was absolutely fascinating, because you would predict that it would, because the acceptability of divorce has changed over time, the commonality of divorce has changed over time. Now up to half of marriages contracted in the UK end in divorce, whereas it used to be a tiny, tiny minority sport. And so what does this say about divorce? How has the kind of people that become divorced changed? Now, divorce used to be a high status issue in the UK. If you go back to the 1920s or the 1930s, divorce was predicted by education and wealth. Now, educate, because divorce was extremely expensive, and therefore only very rich people could do it, and also because education tends to correlate with being rich, and it tends to correlate with intelligence and a certain kind of personality and whatever pro-social personality that means you do well. And so consequently, it was only really the upper classes that could afford to get divorced. Now, as divorce became liberalised, this sort of thing, this relationship started to change. And there were various factors that were shown to predict divorce. Young age at marriage predict divorce. Your parents being divorced predict divorce. And unemployment predict divorce, because it was a big issue at the time. If you go back to the 50s or 60s, the man was the main breadwinner. And so obviously, if he was unemployed, it was very difficult for him to hold the marriage together. And this would mean the woman would leave him. They would get divorced. But the other issue which has been looked at is personality. What is the personality of people, the personality type that predicts getting divorced? Now, personality is our way of being. It's the kind of it's just the way we are in social situations. How many unpleasant things have to happen to you in a day before you lose your temper? That's a marker of the personality trait, neuroticism. That is, that you feel negative feelings strongly. How sociable are you? How much do you enjoy socializing and meeting up with people, and also kind of also taking risks? How much pleasure do you get out of life? This we call extroversion. Extroversion, feeling positive feelings strongly. Then the agreeableness, that's altruism. How much do the feelings of others affect you? How much, when you see a film and there's someone suffering, do you yourself suffer as a consequence, for example? That's altruism. And another dimension of it is empathy. That is, how much can you understand and comprehend and predict what the feelings of others are going to be? That's empathy. Overall, we call this agreeableness. Then you have conscientiousness. Conscientiousness is basically rule following and impulse control. To what extent do you follow the rules? To what extent are you motivated by socially approved goals? To what extent do you set out tasks for yourself, and do you succeed in them? To what extent can you control your impulses and be sort of rule-bound and whatever. That's conscientiousness. And then you finally, there's the openness, and openness is that you're open to new ideas, you're open to new things, you're open to new ways of thinking, and therefore you're kind of, in many ways, kind of a bit artistic and that sort of thing. So those are the big five personality traits. Now, conscientiousness, people that are low in conscientiousness, that predicts things like addiction and alcoholism and not doing very well at school because you just can't be bothered because you're lazy, basically. People that are high in conscientiousness, they earn more money, they do better at school, they do better in the education system. And up to a limited degree, because if they're too rule bound, then they can't really act. But up to a limited degree, they just sort of do better socially, do better in life. Agreeableness, again, people that are high in agreeableness tend to have more friends, they get on better with other people, and so on. They're much less likely to be criminals. Criminality is also associated with low agreeableness and low conscientiousness. Neuroticism, negative feeling strong, is basically mental instability. It's associated with depression, anxiety, and also criminality, to the extent that you're losing your temper and beating people up and getting jealous and that kind of thing. And low neuroticism is therefore associated with doing reasonably well, although an optimum level of neuroticism is a motivator and makes you anxious and thus makes you do better in education. Extroversion, people that are extroverts, associated with poor health because you get more pleasure out of food, out of drink, out of whatever. You take risks and you hurt yourself as a consequence of taking risks. So that's extroversion, but you're more sociable and you get on and whatever. And low extroversion, you're self-contained and you don't really need other people. And then openness is associated with being artistic, being liberal, being left-wing, that sort of thing. So those are the personality traits. Now, have these changed over time? One predictor of divorce used to be open, and this anyway, it was really an interesting study, and they got data from Britain, Flanders and Germany between 1972 and 2009, and they looked at what were the predictors of divorce in terms of personality, and they found some very interesting findings. Now, first of all, it used to be that openness in the 70s was associated with divorce. Why? Because divorce, particularly in Germany, was socially unacceptable. It wasn't the done thing. And so consequently, to think of getting divorced, it was such a radical, bizarre, new thing to get divorced, that it was associated with openness, with being open to new ideas. So as openness used to predict divorce, now that is no longer the case. It is no longer the case that people that are high in openness, that are artistic and open to new things and so on and curious, are more likely to get divorced, because divorce is so socially acceptable. Now, there are a number of things that would predict, you would think, the kind of personality traits that are associated with divorce. They look at this in the paper. One of them is marital satisfaction. So if people that are satisfied with their marriages are more likely to be high in agreeableness. Why? Because if you're high in agreeableness, you're high in empathy and whatever, and you're high in altruism, and therefore you get on better with other people. The other thing was neuroticism, mental instability. That is associated with being unsatisfied with your marriage. Why? Well, because you feel negative feelings strongly, and also because you're mentally unstable, you're going to be more likely to be getting into fights with your partner and all this sort of thing, and so things are going to be very difficult. So that's marital satisfaction. But in some other research found that marital satisfaction does not strongly correlate, necessarily that strongly, although it does correlate with it, with getting divorced. And when you control for marital satisfaction, then of course you still get people getting divorced. And so what's predicting the situation? What is going on? Well, the key factors were agreeableness and conscientiousness. So agreeableness and conscientiousness have a slight stabilizing effect on marriage in the German sample. That is to say, people who are higher in agreeableness and higher in conscientiousness in Germany are less likely to get divorced. In the British sample, conscientiousness was a massive negative predictor of divorce. That is to say, people that are high in conscientiousness are less likely to get divorced in Britain, much less likely to get divorced in Britain than are people who are low in conscientiousness. When you're talking about people who have been married, I mean. Okay, then neuroticism. That was very interesting. It was found that in the UK and Belgium, neuroticism predicts divorce. People who are higher in neuroticism are more likely to get divorced. Openness only predicted divorce in Germany. And in the sample overall, it didn't predict it. And according to the authors, I didn't know this, but according to the authors, the model of the husband being the provider and the wife being the housewife is more inbuilt and has been more resistant to change in Germany than in Belgium or Britain. So openness is a predictor in Germany, but not anywhere else. And then the other big predictor, and it was the big predictor everywhere, was extroversion. So extroverted people are more likely to get divorced. So what is going on here? Well, it seems quite clear, really. People that are low in conscientiousness, low in impulse control, low in rule following. They take a vow before God or before the judge or whatever it happens to be to stay together for life, but they're low in, and they should, and therefore you'd expect them to do that. If they were high in conscientiousness, they'd do that. They could see that as the rule. That's the rules. And therefore they would try very hard to pursue the marriage and try very hard to make sure the marriage doesn't collapse, because they are rule bound and they've set out this vow, they've made this vow, and you'd expect them to stick by it and try as hard as possible to make sure that the marriage goes ahead, because those are the rules and they play by the rules. Secondly, people who are high in conscientiousness are less likely to become alcoholic, they're less likely to take drugs, they're less likely to lose their jobs, they're less likely to become unemployed, they're less likely to do all these things which might damage the marriage and which might, in the case of a male particularly, cause a woman to leave them. They play by the rules. Thirdly, people that are high in conscientiousness are less likely to have affairs, they're less likely to, as I say, these are all examples of following the rules and keeping by socially approved rules, and they're simply less likely to do that. And finally, you could argue that a marriage is something that has to be worked on. Marriages go through good patches and bad patches. Marriages have difficulties that have to be negotiated. If you're high in conscientiousness to a certain extent is a synonym for being diligent, for being assiduous, for being hard-working, for not giving up on things, for keeping trying and trying. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again until you do. That is the motto of a person that's high in conscientiousness. Now, you'd expect a person low in conscientiousness to take the view that, this marriage isn't working, I don't feel happy about it now, and consequently, I want a divorce, and therefore they get divorced. The other factor which they notice is, the authors notice, is religiousness. Conscientiousness predicts religiousness. People that are higher in conscientiousness are higher in religiousness. I've looked at why this relationship is the case in other videos. I don't need to go into it in that much detail here, but one possibility is that as we evolved under Darwinian conditions to become more and more and more conscientious so that we could follow the rules and create cooperative groups that are more likely to survive under harsh Darwinian conditions, we were selecting for that, and we were also selecting for religiousness at the same time, because religiousness makes you more able to survive under Darwinian conditions. It's associated with fertility, it's associated with mental health, associated with physical health, associated with getting on with people, it's associated with not being cast out by the band because you've got this god on your shoulder telling you to behave pro-socially, and so you behave pro-socially so you don't get cast out. So therefore religiousness and conscientiousness have co-evolved together, and consequently they've kind of become connected, and people who are high in conscientiousness tend to be high in religiousness in all societies. So all of these things, therefore, and if you're religious, then of course you've got God telling you you shouldn't get divorced. It's much more socially unacceptable to get divorced. If you're religious, the Bible tells you it's unacceptable to get divorced, and so on. And so conscientiousness predicts not getting divorced. Agreeableness, likewise, people who are agreeable, again, this correlates with being religious. People that are religious are more likely to be high in agreeableness for the same kinds of reasons. You've got this God on your shoulder who promotes agreeableness and telling you that agreeable behaviour that makes the group cooperative and more likely to survive is the will of God. And so consequently, agreeableness means that you are less likely to get divorced as well. Neuroticism is negatively associated with religiousness. People that are highly mentally unstable are less likely to be religious, and so for that reason as well, you would predict that neuroticism would predict getting divorced. And similarly, neuroticism is going to be associated with all kinds of things: mental breakdown, domestic violence, all kinds of unpleasant things are going to be predicted by neuroticism, and therefore you would expect neurotic marriages to be more likely to break down. The other thing that was that in Germany, there was evidence that the relationship with conscientiousness has become increasingly negative over time, but not in the other countries. And so overall, conscientiousness and agreeableness and all of these factors, with the exception of openness, have stayed the same. The other factor that they are people who are low in conscientiousness, low in agreeableness, who are high in neuroticism, high in openness, and high in extroversion, are more likely to get divorced. But it's only openness that's changed. The other issue is extroversion. Why are extroverts more likely to get divorced? Well, one possibility is that extroverts are more sociable, and so they're more likely to meet new people. Secondly, they're more likely to get pleasure out of things. They feel positive feelings strongly, remember? And so therefore, they're more likely to get pleasure even out of something like the buzz of having an affair, the buzz of a new relationship, the buzz of the new. And so this would perhaps incentivize them to have an affair. But the authors argue that the main issue is almost certainly that extroverts are simply more likely to meet new people. They're more likely to create social bonds outside of marriage with everybody, including members of the opposite sex. And then once they've done so, the pleasure, the heightened positive feelings they will feel potentially from the affair will be greater than for introverts. And so therefore, extroverts like Boris Johnson are more likely to have affairs. The other issue that's been looked at in this regard is intelligence. So in general, people who are more intelligent get married. So as a rule, because intelligence is associated with various factors that predict that you would be more likely to get married, such as commitment and being pro-social and this sort of thing. But once you control for that, once you look at people that are married and you do follow-up studies, longitudinal studies, then the higher their intelligence is, the more likely they are to be married 4 years later. So intelligence is negatively associated with divorce. Intelligence is the ability to solve cognitive problems and solve them quickly. IQ is a measure of intelligence. It's how intelligent you are compared to other people of the same age as you. And people who have higher IQs are less inclined to get divorced. Now, why is this the case? Well, one possibility is what you call emotional intelligence. So intelligence predicts the ability to understand, even if you're a bit autistic and low in empathy, if you're high in intelligence, you can compensate for that problem because intelligence predicts the ability through reason to understand the feelings of other people, to understand how other people might think, to solve social problems. Indeed, it's been found that the ability to solve social problems correlates with intelligence at about 0.3. So people who are intelligent are better at dealing with other people and not having fights with other people and not falling out with other people. And therefore, they are better at staying married. People who are higher in intelligence also have higher impulse control and are more of a future orientation. So they're more concerned about the future than the present. They are more able to control their impulses with a view to achieving something in the future. So in that sense, intelligence crosses over with conscientiousness. On this basis, you would predict that intelligent people that wanted to remain married would be less likely to do things that would militate against that, like having affairs or any other activity which might upset their partner. And so for that reason, intelligence should predict staying married. Another reason that is associated with divorce is unemployment, loss of income, that kind of thing. Well, intelligence is associated with high income, it's associated with education, it's associated with basically getting on in life. And so for that reason, you would expect men, particularly men, because women tend to sexually select women for status and so on, and for money, you would expect men who had higher intelligence to be less likely to be divorced by their wives. People who are intelligent are also higher in moral reasoning. So to the extent that marriage is a moral issue, to the extent that you've got together and you've got all your family and friends together and you have vowed that you're going to marry for life and you've vowed that you're going to stay married, this becomes therefore a moral issue. The morality of this could be important to people because if you get divorced, it could be argued that's a kind of moral failing. You've made a vow that you're going to do something and you should therefore try extremely hard to do it and to keep at it and to not get divorced because that is what you have promised you are going to do. And so therefore moral reasoning is higher among intelligent people. They are more moral, they are more concerned about morality and about being moral, and so consequently you would expect them to stay married for that reason. They're also higher, intelligence also predicts ability in what we just call social skill. People that are intelligent are more socially skilled than people who are less intelligent, and so therefore they would be better able to negotiate arguments, they would be less likely to have very serious arguments with their partners, they would be less likely to fall out with their partners and so on. And you certainly would be likely to get less in the way of domestic violence and things like that, because that's another issue. Being low in IQ is associated with alcoholism, it's associated with crime, and therefore you would expect people who had low intelligence to be more likely to become alcoholics, which could pull the marriage apart, and under English law is a specific grounds for divorce. If the husband becomes an alcoholic, they'd be less likely to engage in any kind of crime, and this would include things like domestic violence. They'd have more control of their impulses. Intelligence is essentially also associated with impulse control, and so again you'd expect people that were intelligent to be less likely to divorce. And also Intelligence is associated with being trusting. People who are intelligent are higher in trust. I'm not quite sure why this is. It could be that as peoples have evolved to become more intelligent, they've done this in a context in which they've also evolved to be in tighter and tighter and more strongly bonded groups, because intelligence is associated with ecologies that are extremely harsh, and this selects for intelligence because a harsh ecology means that there are more problems to be solved, more difficult problems to be solved, such as shelter and clothes, and therefore intelligence allows you to do this. But the same environment, because it's harsh, means that you're more likely to survive if you're part of a tightly bonded group that are cooperating, and so the two things have sort of come together, and in order to cooperate you have to be high in trust, and therefore intelligence is becoming directly associated with trust. I'm not quite sure what it might be, but whatever the reason is, people that are intelligent are more trusting. People that are low in intelligence are less trusting. Therefore, people that are low in intelligence will be less likely to forgive, less likely to forgive affairs, more likely to suspect affairs, more likely to become jealous, that sort of thing. And all of these things could predict the collapse for marriage. So overall, then, it can be said that the kind of people that are likely to divorce, overall, although there are all kinds of variations, all kinds of individual differences, all kinds of circumstantial factors that predict divorce, and there's all kinds of extents to which divorce can be beyond the control of a particular individual, if it's the person's spouse that initiates the divorce and causes the divorce. So there's all kinds of caveats in saying this, but overall, divorce is associated with low intelligence, with high extroversion, with low conscientiousness, with low agreeableness, with high mental instability. Those are the key factors that predict divorce, and those haven't changed between 1972 and 2009, despite the fact that the extent of divorce has changed. So to put it very simply, people that get divorced overall are low in intelligence and high in key components of psychopathic personality. Those are the kinds of people that get divorced. Interestingly, as I've looked at in other videos, geniuses, the people that come up with these major innovations, the people, these breakthrough innovations that really change the world, and particularly scientific geniuses, they are marked by a combination of high outlier, high IQ, and moderately antisocial personality. That is to say, moderately low conscientiousness, moderately low agreeableness, and in the case of artists, quite high artistic geniuses, I mean, quite high neuroticism as well. And so consequently, you would expect those people, and this is because if you are high and low in agreeableness, then you new ideas always offend people and offend against vested interests, but you don't care about that, or you're too autistic to anticipate it, even if you did care. If you're low in conscientiousness, you can think outside the box, you're not rule-bound and whatever, and so therefore you're able to make connections that other people wouldn't make, and therefore you're more creative. If you're high in neuroticism, then it can act as a motivator to achieve things. It can make you anxious and want to achieve things, and it can make you see the world in a slightly different way, and it can make you really good at getting to the essence of raw emotions, and therefore this is really good in terms of the arts and so on. So you can understand why these factors predict genius, but they'd also predict divorce. And so what you would expect, and you can see this with quite prominent people, geniuses or semi-geniuses, very prominent people in their fields, is that these kinds of people, particularly in the arts, would be very likely to be divorced. And this is perhaps what we see. Okay, well, I hope this is a bit of interest, and if it has, then please feel free to support me by sending me an offline super chat, which you can see below. This is the best way you can support me, with an offline super chat for me. That's the way that I get the most. If an offline super chat, that's the thing to do. Or through Subscribestar or Patreon. Remember, I've been banned from the other place that we won't mention, so you can't do anything about that. Please do subscribe, please do like this, and please do subscribe on BitChute, because BitChute is the place that is associated with truth and honesty and non-censorship and non-Orwellian Kafkaesque situations. So that's the place to go, BitChute. And remember that you can see me live on The Jolly Heretic on Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, and also at the moment on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time. And I will see you soon, and goodbye. Oh, and if you're married and you're going through a bad patch, then stick at it, folks. Goodbye.